Welcome to FedSoc Forums, a Federalist Society podcast. I'm Elizabeth Slattery, Vice President of Practice Groups. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you won't miss an episode. Now please enjoy today's conversation.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to FedSoc Forums. My name is Cameron Westbrook. I'm a recent graduate of the University of Denver Sturm College of Law. I also serve as a student liaison to the Federalist Society's Property Rights Practice Group. Just as a reminder, all opinions expressed are those of our speakers and not of the Federalist Society, as the Federalist Society takes no positions. Today's program is titled From the Courthouse Steps, Pung v. Isabella County. Pung v. Isabella County. We're very pleased to welcome an excellent group of panelists. Ilya Soman is a professor of law at George Mason University and the B. Kenneth Simon Chair in Constitutional Studies at the Cato Institute. Deborah Lefetra is a senior attorney at Pacific Legal Foundation's Property Rights Practice Group, where she primarily focuses on Supreme Court litigation. One note for audience before we begin. If you have any questions throughout the webinar that pertain to the topic at hand, please submit them through Zoom's Q&A feature, should be at your bottom right, not in the chat so that we'll be able to access them later in the program. With that note, I'll turn things over to our speakers to start the conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Cameron. So hello, everybody. One thing that that Cameron didn't mention is that I was on the litigation teams for both Pung and also for Tyler versus Hennepin County. And that's really where the story begins, because in Tyler, which was decided 3 years ago, the Supreme Court unanimously held that when the government forecloses on a home for taxes, for back taxes, it has to refund the surplus. Otherwise, you know, the equity, taking the equity would be a taking. And in that case, Ms. Tyler didn't argue about what the appropriate amount of the just compensation would be. All she wanted was the surplus proceeds from the auction, which was about $25,000 for her condo. Fast forward 3 years, and now we have Pung versus Isabella County, which arises out of Michigan. And in this case, which started so long ago that it long predates Tyler, but there, the Pung family, through various tragic deaths and so forth, the home was held by the son of the previous owner after the parents were gone, and he was entitled to the homestead exemption on the home, which means he didn't have to pay a $2,000 supplemental tax. For whatever reason, the tax assessor of Isabella County was bound and determined that he should pay that tax anyway. His uncle, Mike Pung, is the executor of his father's estate, and he fought it because under the law, beneficiaries are entitled to maintain the homestead exemption, and they didn't owe the tax. And off they go to the Michigan courts, and the Michigan courts agree the tax isn't owed. And so they go back and forth, and it eventually in 2012, after years of this, the tax assessor sends out a tax bill, does not include the supplemental tax. And Mike Pung goes to the clerk's office to pay it and is told there, oh, yeah, we added it back in. You have to pay it. And he's furious, as you know, who wouldn't be? And he doesn't pay it. And things kind of snowballed from there. And ultimately, the county foreclosed on a $200,000 house for this $2,000 tax that wasn't really owed. And then they immediately put it up for auction, and it came back with a $76,000 at the auction. And the county kept every penny because this was all before Tyler. Well, after Tyler, the Pung family sues in federal court and says, hey, you took our property. We owe $2,000. You took a $200,000 house. All of that equity that you took, we need just compensation for. And normally just compensation means the fair market value. And the county says, well, we're not going to give you that, but we'll kick back the $73,000 that you owe, that we got in surplus proceeds above and beyond the taxes and penalties and so forth. And they said, well, you know, thanks for the 73 grand, but we would like the rest of our equity, please, because it has now vanished into thin air and you took it and we don't have it. And so they sued over it. And they specifically asked the Supreme Court to hold, to grant cert on the question of whether they were entitled to fair market value. And in hindsight, limiting the question that way may have been a mistake, because what the Supreme Court held yesterday is that fair market value is not the rule for tax foreclosures. And it did limit it to just tax foreclosures. It says, yeah, fair market value is the general rule for a taking. And in an eminent domain, they take your house for the highway bypass, whatever, that still gets fair market value. But tax foreclosures, we think that's different. And there's a long history of tax foreclosures where they just kick back the surplus proceeds. And so we're going to say that's an exception to the general rule. And the Pungs, we had made a separate argument, a complementary argument, that the auction process itself has to be fair for the compensation to be just. And there's an 1890 case called the Cherokee Nation that says this. And we argued that certainly in Michigan, which doesn't allow inspections, it requires cash on hand, it doesn't allow the tax debtor to bid on the property, you know, it has all these restrictions, it doesn't advertise, you know, there's a lot going on in Michigan that needs to be better. And we said, if it's not fair, then the compensation isn't just, and they should get fair market value, which again is the general rule. And the court said, sorry, your question presented only asked for a general, that the general rule should apply. And we're saying this is an exception. So you lose on the question presented, but we might agree with you on the fairness of the auction. And two justices, Thomas and Gorsuch, filed a concurrence explicitly saying that they pretty much agreed with us on the fairness point. And so because they did credit that argument, they vacated the Sixth Circuit decision below. So whereas if it had been a reversal, you know, then they would have, then obviously we would have won on the general point. But they didn't affirm, and that's really important. They didn't affirm the Sixth Circuit. They simply erased that decision. And that's because the Sixth Circuit decision had a categorical rule that says surplus proceeds are always okay and represent just compensation. And so the Supreme Court left the door open and said, no, the auction process itself has to be fairly conducted. And if it's not fairly conducted, then the compensation isn't just. And then we would presumably go back to the general rule of fair market value. And so they have now remanded the case back to the lower courts to decide in the first instance whether the auction procedures, you know, everything through the foreclosure and the auction itself were sufficiently fairly conducted that the surplus proceeds would be fair or just compensation. So do you want to take it from there, Ilya, and comment on it a bit?
Sure. Thank you, Debbie, for that great overview, both of the Tyler litigation and of the present case. I'm going to give a few thoughts on the case and its outcome so far. I fear the bottom line is this is the worst Supreme Court takings clause decision in some time, even though technically you can argue technically the property owner won because the lower court decision against them was vacated and remanded. But in terms of the actual doctrine that is set down here, I think it's pretty bad. So start with first principles. The court has long held correctly that the point of just compensation is to compensate the owner whose property has been taken for their losses. And the proper measure of those losses is what the person has lost. And in most cases, that measure is fair market value compensation, just like Debbie said, which is the price that the property would get if it was put up on the open market and sold through market processes. Here, I would note that for a long time now, many legal scholars, including me, have actually criticized fair market value compensation, not on the grounds that it's too much, but that it's often too little. In many cases, when property is taken, the owner actually valued the property at more than the fair market value. After all, if they valued it at less, then why didn't they sell it before themselves, right? Like if you own a piece of property that's less valuable to you than the price you could get for on the market, you would probably just go out and sell it. So if anything, fair market value is a bare minimum, and it's arguable that maybe the correct measure of just compensation in many cases should actually be greater. Nonetheless, the Supreme Court, at least seven justices, concluded that fair market value compensation is not required with tax foreclosures. And Justice Alito, in his majority opinion, emphasized two reasons supposedly justifying these conclusions, neither one of which is actually very good. The first reason is the claim that longstanding precedent backs this position. He cites a bunch of cases. The problem with this recitation of cases is that none of them, not a single one, actually says that fair market value compensation is unnecessary. All of them are cases that simply say the person is entitled to the excess value from the foreclosure sale that's above the taxes that are owed. But none of them reject the proposition that maybe compensation should be greater than that. And some of these cases aren't even about the takings clause at all. They're about the interpretation of various federal statutes. Only one that one could argue maybe does somehow reject fair market value compensation is actually a 1970s case, which does not mention the takings clause even so much as once. But what it does is it says that under the federal bankruptcy code, when there is a mortgage foreclosure, then the person who has had their property foreclosed on for non-payment of a mortgage is not entitled to fair market value compensation under the bankruptcy code. Mortgage foreclosures, of course, are not subject to the takings clause because the takings clause only applies to takings by the government, not to contractual foreclosures between a debtor and a lender. There are various other analytical mistakes in this part of the majority opinion. For example, the opinion confuses eminent domain takings with regulatory takings and makes a hash out of that. And there are some other mistakes as well that I can talk about more in questions if people are interested. But for now, I'll press on to the second rationale, which is the idea that if we do require fair market value payment compensation in these types of situations, then supposedly the whole system of tax foreclosures would be destroyed and wouldn't be operative. This actually isn't true. As pointed out in the amicus brief I filed in the case on behalf of myself, a group of legal scholars, and the Cato Institute, there are actually mechanisms for ensuring that foreclosure auctions target fair market value. For instance, the government can simply set down a law requiring that the minimum bid be at least match the fair market value. There might be other mechanisms as well. But even if it is true, as Justice Thomas points out in his concurrence, joined also by Justice Gorsuch, you can't violate constitutional property rights merely because it would be convenient to do so or make the tax foreclosure system work better or whatnot. If it turns out that the foreclosure system in some states is incompatible with takings clause, the proper thing to do is to foreclose on that foreclosure system rather than foreclose on the takings clause. I would add also that property taxes are not even the only or necessarily the best means of funding local government. There are other approaches, and that's also an option that the government has. So it's not like local government would collapse if this particular mechanism of collecting tax delinquency on property tax delinquencies were constrained or even gotten rid of entirely. And the practical consequences of this decision are likely to be very bad in that it will perpetuate a situation where in many cases we have foreclosure auctions, which yield prices far lower than the fair market value, because of course the government has little incentive to seek the fair market value. They just want to get the sale done as fast as possible. And all they care about getting, understandably, is the money that's owed for the tax delinquency. There is the concurring opinion by Thomas and Gorsuch, which to my mind is really more like a dissent, because they argue that generally speaking, fair market value should be the standard. Any exceptions should be very narrowly construed. They even argued that fair market value should be the standard in this case, and others like it. So for technical procedural reasons, this is styled as a concurrence, but it's really in many ways a dissent. But I don't take more than very limited comfort in that, because it's only two justices, and the other seven did basically join all of Justice Alito's very flawed majority opinion. As Debbie mentions, there is the issue of the fairness of the process that's been remanded. The court gives very little guidance on what a fair process is or might not be. There's somewhat more guidance in Thomas's concurrence, but of course that just represents the views of two justices. I generally think that fairness is actually the wrong question to be asking here. Just compensation is a substantive standard, not a procedural one. It's a standard about how much is the compensation relative to what the owner has lost. As long as you delivered the correct amount of compensation, the takings clause actually, I think, doesn't control procedures, though, as Justice Jackson mentioned in oral arguments, maybe the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment, of the 14th Amendment, those might constrain procedures at least to some degree and require things like notice, hearings, and perhaps other things as well. But as for the takings clause, the relevant part here, what it says is that the compensation must be just, which I think is just relative to the amount that the owner has lost. And the Supreme Court here failed to properly enforce that, even though doing so would have meant applying a relatively simple rule that at the very least there has to be fair market value compensation. There are more difficult questions about whether in some instances it should be more than that, but at the very least, with perhaps extremely rare exceptions, which cannot include every single tax foreclosure out there, the fair market value should be at least a bare minimum for the compensation that is owed. So we will see how this works out on remand, and what the lower courts and perhaps ultimately the Supreme Court decide about what exactly is a fair process and what is not. But for the moment, I think this is a badly reasoned decision with bad argumentation, twisting of precedent, and undermining of very basic takings clause standards. Other than that, it's totally great. I look forward to the questions. Thank you.
I would just like to add one thing to Ilya's really pointed deconstruction of the opinion, and that is one of the key elements that we've argued is it is inherently unfair to foreclose on a large piece of real property when there is a relatively small amount of taxes owed. And that would have been a narrower path for the court to take had it chosen to do so. And that we'll certainly be pressing that on remand, that and also I should add that this isn't only a matter for the courts, because legislatures also have a role to play here. And I know that Pacific Legal Foundation's legal policy team has worked with a lot of state legislatures to ensure that, you know, you would never have a $200,000 home foreclosed on for a $2,000 debt, and to ensure that notice is sufficient and other procedural elements that, I mean, Ilya's right that it process doesn't get to just compensation necessarily, but they can work together. And so at least on the legislative end, we can work on bringing those two closer together, trying to take a slightly more optimistic view of this.
I don't have a lot to add. I totally agree. Legislative reform is often desirable. It is not even necessarily my view, as I said before, that the Constitution has nothing to say about process. My general thought, though, following Justice Jackson into our argument, is that the more proper home for the process aspect of this may be in the due process clause. You can try to argue that maybe somehow the takings clause requires some process as well, but I think that's a tougher argument. And also, again, it remains to be seen exactly what the lower courts and perhaps eventually the Supreme Court will say about what is a fair process and what it is not. I totally agree that, like, a, you know, that if there's a big, this huge disproportion between the value of the foreclosed property and the tax that here, like, you know, the foreclosed property has a value probably of about $195,000, and we have about $2,200 disputed tax debt. You know, that strikes me as intuitively unfair. Whether that's required by the Constitution, that standard is a tougher question. One last very small factual point in terms of the value of the property, it's worth noting that before the seizure and foreclosure, the county itself had assessed the property's value at $194,400 for tax purposes. After the foreclosure auction, the new owner some months later resold it for $195,000. So it is very likely, though perhaps not certain, that the true fair market value at that time at least was somewhere around $194,000, $195,000. Whether you buy the county's assessment or whether you look at what it actually sold for some months later in an ordinary you know, market sales process.
All right. Well, so just a reminder to the audience, we have a few minutes left. So if you have any questions, be sure to put those in the Q&A box down below. We have one right here. You know, you're talking about going down on remand down to the Sixth Circuit. So on remand, what specific issues do you expect the Sixth Circuit to focus on? And could this case still result in some relief for the Pung family?
I would think that the issues below will focus on the procedures throughout the case. I mean, not just the auction. The auction itself was the culmination of a much longer procedure that involved, you know, how the foreclosure happened, whether it ever should have happened. Then the notice issues that I alluded to, where they were sending notices to a different address than they'd ever sent before. So they're the matters that are unique to the Pungs, you know, in terms of how the assessor was going after them. And then there are the issues related to the way Michigan conducts its tax sales, you know, requiring you to have cash on hand, you know, refusing to allow inspections, those sorts of things. And those would all be issues in what is a fair process for determining what the just compensation is. You know, in an eminent domain case, if you're trying to determine just compensation, you have appraisals and experts. And if it's a business, you know, you might have expert testimony about goodwill and you know, other commercial elements to it. And there's just none of that in this context. And we think that by presenting to the court, you know, all of the ways that this process was deficient from start to finish, that would be justification for going beyond the surplus proceeds from this inadequate auction and restoring the traditional rule of fair market value, certainly in this case.
Yeah, I mean, I generally agree with that. I think a whole bunch of different issues involving the fairness, quote unquote, will be before the Sixth Circuit or possibly the district court if the Sixth Circuit chooses to send it back down there. And they will have to weigh those issues with so far relatively little guidance from the Supreme Court. Again, I think it would have been much easier to simply say this is about comparing the compensation to the value of the property is taken. But if we're going to go down the route of procedural fairness, then a whole bunch of things things, you know, might well be relevant. And as Debbie very effectively explained, there is a large number of problems with this particular, taking such that, there's a good chance that the lower courts will ultimately fasten on to at least some things that look like they're unfair in this process, and therefore overturn this particular result, but how beneficial it will be for other people in similar situations is, remains to be seen.
Yeah, I would also just add that although the Supreme Court yesterday dodged the process question, there are older Supreme Court cases that are very clear that property owners are protected when the sale price is too low or the process is unfair or too much property is sold relative to the debt incurred. So it's not like we're writing on a blank slate. We just need to, get them to look back at those older cases, which have never been overruled and are sometimes even cited in more recent cases, to say that, yeah, they do apply here.
Awesome. We have quite a few. We're probably not going to be able to get to all of them, but we have another one from Caitlin. Are you aware of any challenges to tax foreclosure proceedings brewing in the courts that could bring about precedent more favorable to property owners and protection of equity?
Oh my gosh, there are so many cases. So yes, I mean, we've got cases in the District of Columbia, we've got cases in New Jersey, in Michigan, in Illinois. So yes, the pipeline remains full and we will continue to fight on behalf of property owners and against home equity theft in all of its incarnations.
And another one, would one or both of you be willing to comment on the excessive fines argument and how the court handled this constitutional issue?
Yeah, they only spent a brief amount of time on this. I think if the court had handled the takings issue properly, they wouldn't have needed to deal with the excessive fine issue. If this is just an ordinary taking requiring compensation, then perhaps it's not really a fine at all. On the other hand, since they rejected the notion that the takings clause covers the seizure of the additional value up to the fair market value, then I think there are sort of more difficult issues about whether this counts as a fine, because if it does count as a fine, then it seems like it's wildly excessive. Because the extra value that was lost beyond what was given back is something like 50 or 60 times greater than the $2,000 disputed tax debt. So I think there was a pretty good case that if this is not a taking requiring full compensation, then it qualifies as a fine and then it's excessive. So they probably flubbed that issue as well, though they only ended up flubbing that issue because they flubbed the takings issue, which was easier.
Awesome. And it's actually a question of my own. Professor Soman, you mentioned that there might be a broader problem as a result of this decision with localities just not being incentivized to get full value for these properties. But I saw a tweet yesterday that said something about this was the position that didn't win out was philosophically correct, but possibly practically difficult. And my question is, is that sort of representative of a broader problem? What do we do in these cases where the court feels like it's impractical to go the right way on this, or your perceived right way, but the Constitution says otherwise?
Yeah, so I think I covered this before when I addressed Justice Alito's argument about how this would damage the tax foreclosure system. So I'm not going to go through the same points again, except to very briefly note that, one, there are actually ways to structure foreclosure auctions to at least greatly reduce the likelihood of getting a price that's way below fair market value. Two, if that's not the case, then there are lots of other options, such as just not using foreclosure auctions, or funding local government through mechanisms other than property taxes, or at least relying on property taxes less than we do now. Although I admit here I'm actually in a minority among other land use scholars, I think it would be good to get rid of property taxes and fund local government another way. Most land use scholars think that property taxes are a relatively good way of funding local government. But even if people are unwilling to go all the way with me to say, like, let's get rid of them entirely, at the very least, it should be possible for local governments to be less reliant on them at the margin. And if that happens, there would be less situations with tax delinquencies because property taxes would be lower.
I would also add that the counties, I mean, the governments always scream that it's going to be a complete disaster if they have to comply with the Constitution. And I think it was 2012 in the Arkansas Fish and Game takings case that Justice Ginsburg said that the government complains in this case, as it does in every takings case, that the sky is going to fall. It didn't fall before. It's not going to fall now. And, you know, I regret that Justice Alito was so willing to credit those cries of the sky is falling.
Yeah, they are like the boy who cried wolf. And I think there probably isn't really a wolf here in this particular case. But at the very least, that wolf is a lot smaller than Justice Alito makes it seem like.
Well, I just wanted to thank our panelists. We're right on time. So I want to thank our panelists for sharing your expertise and opinions on this important issue. If our audience is interested in learning more about the Federalist Society's programming, please visit our website at fedsoc.org. With that, we're adjourned.
Thanks for listening to FedSoc Forums, a Federalist Society podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you won't miss an episode. To learn more, visit our website, fedsoc.org.